Jesse Corcoran Podcast.
Just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Monday, December 20th. 2021, 323 days remaining in our American democratic system, as we have done. How you doing? It's JC here at jcontheline.com. By the way, I have sort of boasted about the idea that here on the podcast, we only talk about politics when it is absolutely unavoidable. And this might be one of these days just for one little remark, and that is how I open and close the show every day with that number, which today is 323 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. And a guy, very nice guy, fan of the podcast, said, I've never really seen you, JC, as one of those tin foil hat guys. So what's with this countdown of 323 days? And I told him, I said, if you're really paying attention, you know that this is scaring the bejesus out of everybody. And I'm talking about journalists who have been around for, you know, four or five or longer decades, who have been covering American politics. They're all terrified. Not all of them, but a lot of them are terrified because they feel that they see something coming. And that's what I see too, which is, I think, a big problem with the midterms coming up in less than a year, because the Trump sympathizers have been installing judges and legislators and all sorts of stuff that was not in place during the last election. You had people of integrity who were making sure that all the votes were being counted and that we had an election system that had some integrity to it. And a lot of those people are gone now. They're gone. And so you have Trump sympathizers who are in so many of these positions, you know, election officials and stuff like that. And it's also been made much easier to overturn the results of an election. You have municipalities, you have counties, you have cities across the fruited plains where laws have been passed or are sitting there waiting to be passed that will make it much, much easier for, you know, one or two guys to just sit there and say, eh, I don't know, popular vote says it's this guy, but we're just going to toss this out and say it's the other guy who won. And I think you're going to have rioting in the streets. It's going to look like the 60s. I think things are going to be set on fire. And yes, I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. I'm not saying this for a fact or to get people to say, oh, did you hear what J.C. Corcoran said? First of all, I'm way past that. I've been doing this job a long time. I don't really need validation in that regard. I'm saying this stuff because I mean it. So that's the reason why. In the meantime, this Donald Trump, Bill O'Reilly show has been playing arenas, and there's been a lot of empty seats, and the people who are putting these things on with Trump's and O'Reilly's people got tired of being ridiculed about the empty seats. So over the weekend, somebody took a shot of the empty seats in the crowd, and within about an hour or two, somebody had photoshopped that picture, and it was a bad photoshopping job, by the way, but they made it look like the place was packed, and it was so obviously phony. You can see things didn't even match up and stuff like that. We're going to be shifting gears here and talking about the Kurt and Brenda movie, and that's how I would describe it, by the way, American Underdog, which opens on Christmas Day. We're going to have two reviews today because I think it's going to be necessary, the way it plays in St. Louis and the way it plays in the rest of the country. So we'll get to that in just a little while. There is a problem out there for those of you who are listening early in the morning. You know, we post at 7 o'clock every day, so if you're listening to this now, and you're trying to get somewhere in the greater St. Louis metropolitan area, good luck. We have black ice being reported in a lot of places. There's a big crash with a lot of cars involved right near the ballpark on Highway 40. The bridge there is apparently like glass. People are sliding around all over the place. Obviously, if you're listening to the podcast later in the day, this probably will not be an issue. But as for right now, they've called out the salt trucks because of these icy conditions. And this is across the entire St. Louis region, so watch out. And this is the last day of autumn. That seems funny. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it's Wednesday. Hold on, let me just check this real quick. No, it's Friday. It's Friday, okay? So 48 today, 50 tomorrow, 40 for the high on Wednesday, 56 on Thursday, and then Friday, 67 degrees on Christmas Eve. And then even next Monday, the 27th, for the after Christmas sales, 61 degrees. This isn't right. This is not right. 60 Minutes did a big story last night on the tornadoes down in Kentucky. They had some scientists on trying to explain what the hell is going on. And for the last couple of weeks, people are like, oh, this is great. Isn't this great? Look, it's December. We're out in shirt sleeves. And it's like, yeah, the only downside, there's two. First of all, it's Christmas. And remember all that dashing through the snow stuff? That won't be happening. And number two, yeah, 67 degrees on Christmas Eve in the Midwest. That's wonderful. Isn't that just great? Wait till it's 120 degrees in the middle of the summer and the crops just start burning up out in the field. And then there's no wheat and grain and soybeans and corn and stuff like that. You think the COVID thing has put a crimp in your style. And the COVID thing is something I wish I still didn't have to talk about. But like I said, I'm just doing my job here. It fucked up Paul Rudd's weekend, being installed as a member of the Five Timers Club. And instead, they send home the cast. They send home the crew. They tell the audience, You messed up. You trusted us. This is a handful of people introduced a bunch of pre-recorded sketches and stuff. And although they did try to do a weekend update live with Michael Che and Tina Fey, and that was sort of fun. No effects, no slides, you know, no pictures, no nothing, like no set. They were just sort of sitting there on chairs because they didn't have any staff. They didn't have any crew. But they had some old recorded pieces, tons of those. But then they also had some new stuff that was actually pretty darn good. They did a thing with Paul Rudd, A.D. Bryant, and Kate McKinnon that was hilarious. So you got that. The Blues game in Ottawa tomorrow night has been postponed. They won't let people into the country. So no Blues game tomorrow night. And I just remember a couple of those Blues games when I was much, much younger. And it would be the night before Thanksgiving or the night before Christmas or something like that. It was just such a party atmosphere. It was so much fun. And you would always run into people who had left St. Louis but were back for the holidays to visit family and stuff, and would say, well, let's go see a Blues game. And then you would run into them between periods. It was so fun. It was so exciting. We're losing all of that now. The Browns, 3-point favorites at home against Vegas. That's at 4 o'clock. That's a great time for a National Football League game, huh? 4 o'clock on a Monday afternoon as they're trying to catch up. The Bears, 3.5-point underdogs at home against the Vikings. Trevor Noah was featured on 60 Minutes last night. He's one of those guys that he doesn't really bother me, but he doesn't interest me either. I pretty much stopped watching The Daily Show unless I know that Jordan Klepper or some of the other guys who do those middle pieces, you know, like halfway through the show, those pre-recorded packaged pieces. Jordan Klepper is one of the funniest people I think I've ever seen on television. And all he does is just ask questions, and he lets these people just wrap a rope around their own necks, and he just stands there and watches the whole thing. So funny and so good at what he does. You know, it's really funny. Steve Allen was the guy who really invented that whole man on the street thing as it relates to late night television. Jack Parr didn't do much of that. Johnny Carson didn't do much of that. But then David Letterman came along, obviously, and just absolutely perfected it. And now you have a lot of people. So I think it was Jimmy Kimmel or somebody who's doing, they didn't call it Stupid Pet Tricks, but it was Stupid Pet Tricks. And I think it was also Jimmy Kimmel who did the thing that Dave used to do where they're going to have the kids at Halloween come to the door, but they were always, you know, dressed as something that had to do with the news or something. And that was really, really funny. By the way, Darlene Love, when Dave went off the air, what was it, like 5 years ago, said she was never going to do Christmas Baby, Please Come Home Again. Well, she did it on The View last week. The View? The fucking View? Sorry, I don't get that one. I don't get that one. Elvis was drafted into the Army on this date back in 1957. Merry Christmas, the movie that put Michael Moore on the map. And when he's on the map, by the way, he's visible from space. Roger and Me came out in 1989. Tremendous, tremendous mockumentary, I guess you would say. I mean, there were a lot of really, really serious moments. Most of it was, but it was also one of the damn most entertaining and funny things I think I've ever seen. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Boy, was that a beautifully made movie. The snow coming down in Europe, wherever it was incredible. Daniel Craig, 2011. Godfather 2 came out on this date, 1974, one of the very rare instances where a movie that has either a little number or a Roman numeral at the end of the title is actually really good. It's a Wonderful Life was released on this date, 1946, to lukewarm reviews, of course, a staple now of holiday viewing. The first Father of the Bride movie came out in 1991. Frank, played by Martin Short. Birthdays today, Jonah Hill, 38. He's going to play Jerry Garcia in a biopic. And I had a guy the other night at the movie theater go, I really like biopics. I didn't have the heart. He seemed like a nice guy. I didn't have the heart to tell him there's no such word as biopics. It's a biopic, as in biography, picture, biopic. In my younger days, I might have corrected him. But now people have guns everywhere. Oh, it's not biopic. It's biopic, huh? You're done. And I don't know how I missed this because apparently it is not new. I didn't even look at the date. Apparently it came out a couple of months ago, but I missed it. And I don't know how I miss anything from Randy Rainbow because that fucking guy cracks me up. If you missed this, I had this posted on my Facebook page, the Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Take it away, Randy.
And joining me now is a man who's been canceled more times than my subscription to Aaron Carter's OnlyFans page, Republican Senator from Missouri, Josh Hawley. Hey, girl.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be with you. You know, I grew up in...
Okay, let's cut the shit. You objected to the Electoral College certification. You voted no on an anti-Asian hate crimes bill. But perhaps what you're most hated for is fist-pumping those violent Trump supporters on January 6th in a photo that went viral, making yours the most famous fist in the Senate, if you don't count Lindsey Graham. But that's another story.
Well, thank you for that.
Whatever.
So I think what we're seeing now is an attempt by the left to lie about our motivations, to lie about our actions in order to grab power.
Calm down, Mr. Pfister.
They want to silence dissent. They want to silence me. And I tell you right now,
I am not going to back down before a liberal mob.
All the crackpot villains in the GOP only care to cover their behinds. And since the last election caused an insurrection, they've lost their goddamn minds. With their far-fetched fairy tales and heartless schemes and their lack of dignity and poise, they blabber and spout and they all tend to shout, so I try to block out their noise.
They want to shut down conservatives, they want to shut down libertarians.
Clang, clang, clang went Josh Hawley. Yap, yap, yap went Ted Cruz. Crap, crap, crap went McCarthy.
'Cause his party continued to lose.
Clang, clang, clang.
Flip, flop, flip went the flippers. Bitch, bitch, bitch went the base.
Bitch,
bitch, bitch went McConnell. As his neck tried to swallow his face. Not a fact they can produce, so they distract with burger bans and Dr. Seuss.
What's wrong with them?
They block relief their voters need. Their only beef is that Joe Biden might succeed. And so push, 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 go their puppet. Yuck, 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 go the dance. Fuck, fuck, fuck goes Liz Cheney. 'Cause the party she knew turned anarchic, askew, and obscene. Thanks to Boebert and Green.
They've lost our trust, they'd sell their soul. If only just to gain some power and control. They have no shame,
they have no shame.
Or decency,
or decency.
And who the hell ever exists or I'm on TV?
Creep, creep, creep went the creeper. Grump, grump, grump went Rand Paul. Trump, Trump, Trump went Jim Jordan.
They're so slimy, they make my skin crawl.
Democrats are destroying this nation.
Bingo.
Da, da, da went DeSantis.
Bang, bang, bang
went the feds. Clang, clang, clang went Josh Hawley. As their party implodes, gerrymanders, corrodes, and colludes. And that gate sends out nudes. They'll continue to cheat and to spar and repeat all the garbage they sell. Till they all go to hell.
Welcome to Missouri. All right, one more thing before we get to the Kurt and Brenda movie, American Underdog. I'll play this for you. Jennifer Beals turned 58 over the weekend. That's hard to believe. But anyhow, we had her on the show a couple of years back, and she left us with one of those Hollywood stories that after you hear it, you just never forget it. You got to remember, she's a kid from Chicago. What is she like? 18, 19 years old. She's there at the audition. She's scratching her head going, wait a minute, I've got to dance and weld in the same movie? Okay, whatever. And then they're like, well, don't worry about it because you're not really going to be doing the dancing because you can't dance. We're gonna make somebody look like you, put them in a wig, and then shoot it with a lot of bright background so you can't really see the face. And this girl will be moving so fast when she dances. And then we'll intersperse. We will cut in shots of your face and make it look like you're the one doing the dancing and the welding too because we don't want you near this thing that's like 20,000 degrees. And she says, sure. And they're like, you're hired. We start shooting Monday morning Beyond the Lot then. And Jennifer Beals from Flashdance takes it from there.
And there are stories that we have heard over and over again about the legendary decadence of Hollywood. And a lot of times we think that maybe some of those stories are a little bit exaggerated. I want you to tell this is not one of these stories where Hollywood chewed Jennifer Beals up and spit her out. You walked away. Did it have to do with the parking lot story? I want you to tell the parking lot story.
Which one?
Well, you arrived at work early one morning and
you were looking
in cars that you shouldn't have been looking into?
I was. It's not that I was looking into them that I shouldn't have been looking
You're
into them.
You're a voyeur, admit it!
Telephoto lens? What telephoto lens? I just, noticed that a lot of people were bent over in their cars. And
this is in the parking lot as you arrive
in the parking lot,
at work,
as I arrived
like at
to work.
A major movie studio.
Right.
And there's hundreds of cars outside.
Yes, and I, of course, the altruistic side is thinking, is someone ill? Are they getting sick in the car? And then I realized that most of those people, I don't think anybody was truly sick, but they were all doing cocaine. And then some of the people, I would see, little female heads bopping up and down in the car. And I just thought, that's interesting.
Welcome to Hollywood,
so
Jennifer.
You just went and put your leg warmers on and got ready for rehearsals.
I just thought, wow. And it didn't, honest to God, it didn't occur to me what was going on until later in the day. I thought, what was that about?
You're right in the middle of a take and you go, ding.
Then I'm like, ruh-ro.
Jennifer Beals, you nasty girl. One of many reasons why we adore you. All right. If you were around for the 1999 St. Louis Rams season, you remember this like it was yesterday.
McNair will work out of the shotgun.
St. Louis Rams and the 63-year-old grandfather, champions of the NFL.
Well, a lot of us have been waiting for this movie for a long time. A lot of people also with lowered expectations. Why is that? Because when we got the first word that they're going to be making a movie, one of the greatest stories in the history of sports, that is not an exaggeration. It is. I remember we had Mike Lupica on the show. Mike Lupica, a very, very revered sports journalist out of New York. I remember we had him on the air back in the late 90s, and I said, we got this Mark McGwire thing going on with the home run chase, and you also got this Kurt Warner thing going on. Which to you is the bigger story? And he just started laughing because he said, what are you talking about? Are you kidding? People hit home runs all the time. This Kurt Warner story is not to be believed. A Hollywood screenwriter wrote this as fiction and then presented it to a studio, you'd be laughed out of the building because it's like, come on, it's too unbelievable. But it's actually happening, and you're watching it there in St. Louis. And so that's really when I got some sort of perspective on how big a deal this Kurt Warner story was. And of course, right after that, they go on to win the Super Bowl, and the rest is history. The other reason some people have lowered expectations is because a lot of people, let's just deal with the big elephant in the room right now, a lot of people hate Brenda Warner. And in full disclosure, I should tell you that during that period, I was working for the Rams Radio Network. Our station had the games. We had access to all sorts of things. I did the first interview with Dick Vermeil following his, you can call it his resignation, but he was really pushed out by the Rams organization because they wanted Mike Martz in there.
But the other thing that it provided to me was access to the Warners. And I had Kurt and Brenda on the show many times, got to hang out with them a little bit from time to time, got to know Brenda reasonably well. And let's just put it this way. I understand why a lot of people don't like her. I get that. But I liked her, and I still like her. And I think that one of the things that may come out of this, much in the way the Beatles documentary, the Peter Jackson thing that's been running on Disney Plus for the last couple of weeks, finally puts a stake in the heart of this notion that Yoko broke up the Beatles, all right? Not to digress here for a moment, but the Beatles, well, I'm not going to digress. But it's sort of the same thing. I think that one of the things that will happen for people who see American Underdog, which opens on Christmas Day, one of the things that may happen is you might become a little more sympathetic to the whole Brenda Warner thing, and maybe some people will say, well, if this is what really happened, I guess I can understand this a little bit more. And what was it that happened? Well, you come out of the Marines, you're in the middle of nowhere, beautiful nowhere, downtown Iowa, you're divorced, you got two kids, one who's blind because the ex-boyfriend accidentally dropped the kid in the tub. He hit his head, lost his vision, and became a little more impaired than that. You know, and you talk about having nothing. And it's not like this is the major focal point of the movie or anything. I just think this is something that people might take away from having seen the movie. You might sit there and go, wow, you call these people destitute. So, you know, for somebody who never had anything for the whole first part of her life, suddenly now has a husband who hits it big, you know, and she gets her haircut funny and she starts wearing, you know, exorbitant fashion and stuff like that. And you know what? I'm fine with it. I'm 100% fine with it. And I don't want to overplay this point because people will laugh at me, but I will tell you that I saw a lot of myself in this movie. I really did. You know, if you read my first book, you know I moved 10 times in 10 years. And even when I was in Buffalo, right before I got to St. Louis, I was making $23,000 a year in 1983, okay? And even my first job at Casey paid me $38,000. That was it. Then over the course of the next couple of years, as the ratings, you know, tripled and quadrupled, and we were actually breathing down the neck of KMOX, that's when I started asking for more money, and that's when the whole thing went kerplooey for a while. But, you know, you move 10 times in 10 years, you know, you have plastic furniture and everything you own can be fit into, like, not just a U-Haul trailer that you hook on the back of your car, but on a small trailer that you hook on the back of your car. And Kurt and Brenda had less than that. Now, I'm tough on movies, and I'm especially tough on sports movies, because it just seems like whenever you watch a sports movie, on very, very rare occasions, will the sports action actually look believable. Even a movie like Field of Dreams, which I adore, I just love the movie, you know, a lot of the baseball action is not exactly believable. These don't look like major league ball players. And movies with football scenes usually are even worse. Now, I said we might have to do two versions of this review, one for St. Louis and one for everybody outside of St. Louis, because it's a huge, monumental story that everybody lived through, and I think a lot of people will flock to this movie regardless of what any critic says. But then outside of St. Louis, I don't detect a lot of appetite for the movie, and we're going to find out soon enough because the movie, as I said, opens on Christmas Day, and then you'll start seeing the box office numbers and stuff like that. The other reason that people had low expectations when we started hearing about this, even though it's a great story, is because the people who made the movie up until now have made all faith-based movies. These are these movies you go to, and if you're not into Jesus, really not a lot in the movie for you. These things tend to be preachy and heavy-handed. And so it's like, oh God, these guys are going to tell the story. That's all we need. Well, I'm happy to tell you that there is so little of that in American Underdog, I can't tell you how pleased I was. There's a little bit in there. Don't get me wrong. There's a little bit in there, but it's not heavy-handed. It is not preachy. I think I've seen movies with Al Pacino where they talk about God more than they do in American Underdog. So I think that was a smart idea. That was a smart way to do this. The guy that got to play Mike Martz
looks and acts exactly like him. The guy, you know, you got Dennis Quaid playing Dick Vermeil, although I will tell you that the Dennis Quaid character does not show up in the movie until, I think it's like an hour and 10 minutes in. And he doesn't have very many scenes, but the scenes he does have, very effective. And I don't want to give too much away here, but I will say that Mike Martz, I believe, gets better treatment than he deserves in this movie. And as the story does play out, we find out things that even dedicated St. Louis Rams fans were back in the late 90s. I think you're going to learn one or two things that you probably did not know. This is not a football movie. This is a movie about Kurt and Brenda and their ability to overcome adversity. And when I say adversity, that's in boldface caps. A lot of people have a rough time on the way to becoming famous or successful or whatever it is on that level. But I can't stress enough the level, the degree of adversity that you see played out. You see some of these apartments and houses that they were living in the middle of nowhere, fucking Iowa. And you really wonder how they made it. Now, having said all that about the fact that it is not a football movie, quote unquote, here's some more good news. The football action, when they finally do get around to it, is some of the best I've ever seen depicted on film. There's a lot of CGI, and they keep cutting back and forth from the real footage to the fake stuff that they make for the movie, but it is absolutely seamless. I don't know if that's good planning, good editing, or both, but it really, really plays like the real thing, and that's hard to do. Zach Levi does a fantastic job. I think he's really captured Kurt's spirit. And then Anna Paquin, who plays Brenda, I think overacts a little bit from time to time. She's a little overdramatic, and that's not how Brenda is, really. But I don't think it like ruins the movie or anything. I just think it's something that I noticed. And again, 99.9% of the audience seeing the movie has never met Brenda Warner, so it's probably not really going to affect you. My main criticism of American Underdog is the casting. And I'm not talking about Zach Levi or Anna Paquin. I'm talking about the choice of the producers and the directors of the movie. And there are two directors, by the way. That's why I said it that way. But these two actors play Kurt and Brenda for the entire movie. I didn't believe them as college students. They were way too old. Kurt was still in college when he met Brenda. And then it's 10 years later, and they're playing in the Super Bowl, and it's the same two actors, and they look exactly the same. And I will tell you this, especially Anna Paquin looks way too old to be playing Brenda. But as I said early on in the movie, I don't really know how you could have done it. Maybe with some CGI, maybe with some more makeup or lighting or some sort of special effects, or maybe as college students, they should have had two other actors portray Kurt and Brenda so that it looked more believable. But it's the same two actors for the whole movie, and they look exactly the same. You don't look at 28 what you looked like when you were 20 years old. So that did bother me, and it was a distraction. But I leave you with this. This is a very good movie. They did a nice job. There's plenty to like, and it's a real crowd pleaser. There will be people crying at the end of this movie. And there's also been some criticism of the way the movie was made because the movie does, I'm not giving anything away here. This has been talked about. The movie ends with the Super Bowl win. I had some people from Arizona sitting down the aisle from me, and they were pissed. And it's like, well, first of all, you got 2 hours. There's a lot of story to tell here. You got to end it somewhere. And if you're making the best possible movie, well, you do what these guys did. You end it with the Super Bowl. If you're making a movie to make people in Arizona happy, well, then you keep the movie going. But that's not what they did. So even with the criticisms about the early casting in the movie and some other things, there's plenty to like. As I said, in the movie, the football action is absolutely sensational. The story is well told. I think Zach Levi really does a great job portraying Kurt Warner. I think the supporting cast is good. And especially if you were from St. Louis, and especially if you were a Rams fan while all this was going on, you're going to love this movie. And like I said early on, we might have to do two different versions of the review, one for people outside St. Louis who didn't live this whole thing, game after game, day after day, development after development. And the more I think about it, it's like, fuck them, I don't really care about them. This movie is going to be a big, big favorite in St. Louis. 3.5 out of 5 corks for American Underdog. It opens on Christmas Day. And with that, we say bye-bye for Monday, December 20th, 2021. 323 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. We're going to do shows, really, for the entire week. A lot of people are bailing out on you. I'm going to be here with you every day this week. At least I think I am, unless something happens to interrupt that. We got to fly later on in the week and everything like that, so you never know. You can see my stuff on Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. You may email me at jc@jconline.com. We publish absolutely free Monday through Friday, right about 7 a.m. If you miss a podcast, don't worry. It is archived right here on the website for you. Have a great day, everybody. Watch out this morning. I got the salt trucks out. If you're listening later on in the day, no problem. But if you're listening here at, you know, like the 7 or 8 o'clock hour, you got black ice all over the place. So be careful. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.